This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome. It's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year with international best-selling superstar Cecilia Ahern, who hopefully you heard on our previous episode. If not, you should probably listen to them in order.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it doesn't make sense otherwise.
No, go back, listen to that one, then come back. Or if not, just hang around because Cecilia is always great to listen to. Cecilia, question number one. What is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
So it is called Queen Bee by Kira Geraghty. And it's very unusual for me to laugh out loud during a book because I don't usually read funny books, but I howled with laughter. It's kind of like Bridget Jones meets menopause. And, you know, at the beginning of Bridget Jones, when she used to have calorie counts or alcohol counts and things like that, this is all the symptoms of menopause, like rage, bitterness. And I just found it absolutely hilarious. I think it was good timing for me. And I laughed and laughed, but it was also so moving. So I also kind of shed a tear. And it was really one of the best books I've read in a long, long time.
Give us the title and author again.
Queen Bee by Kira Geraghty.
Okay.
Excellent. Do you work best, Cecilia, with deadlines? Do you like to have that sort of ticking clock, a bit of pressure, or would you rather it sort of open-ended?
Well, I always have a deadline. I deliver a novel every year. The 31st of May is my date every year. Hold on, the 31 days in May, April.
Yeah, 31 days in May.
Yeah, I got that right. So I always have a deadline, and usually my schedule will be, I'd begin in January, it's due in May, I edit in the summer, and I publish in the autumn. So yes, I do work best with deadlines.
So that's an incredible routine. So is it like January the 1st that you start?
Well, fourth maybe, you know, whenever we're back to reality after Christmas. That has been the case for 19 years. I know we're publishing now in April. But so we've slightly changed and I'm going to have to find a new system. But it will be the same. It will be, you know, 6 months of writing, then we edit and then I publish.
And that's every day? Every day?
Pretty much every day. Yeah. I mean, it changes. I do have three children and lives change. So I kind of work around them. But you definitely do about 4 hours of writing every day.
And so we're just interested in structure here, you know. So I'm finding that absolutely fascinating. Do you think that you would ever come up with an idea that was like two books or a double book or a book that was going to be 900 pages? And you're going to have to, would you have that conversation with your editor and say, I'm going to take two chunks at this, so we're going to have to disrupt that? Or would everyone think, Cecilia, what are you doing? We know how you work. Just stick to the plot.
No, they're very, I've done, like, sometimes I've written two books in 1 year. And then sometimes I've also written, you know, short stories as well as writing novels. So I've always kind of got a little side project going. So, you know, I'm writing every day. I'm not necessarily writing the same thing every day. I could be working on different projects. But they're very good at, if there was, like, I've taken years off from maternity leave and things like that, for somehow we've just caught up and had 19 books over 19 years. So they're good at listening to me. There's no pressure. It's just that I like to write very quickly. I kind of write like I'm feeling very impatient. I want to get to the end of the story. So I'm racing to get there.
How many words a day is that?
I actually don't know. Like, so a chapter, I would, each time, each sitting, I would write a chapter.
Goodness me.
I'm aware that it's April the 24th and you've got a book to deliver in 5 weeks.
Well, this is, see, April, it used to be published in October and now we're doing April to April. So I can't quite figure out how to explain what that schedule is. But I've written my next novel and then I'm on to the next one. COVID kind of changed my dates and messed everything up, as it did for everybody.
So in a thousand different ways, it's like old hat. You've already written a whole new novel and you're on the next one.
I can barely even remember this novel, to be honest.
Okay. Is there an author, or maybe authors, who you will always read, whatever they write and wherever they publish? And who are they?
I'm a massive fan of Karen Slaughter and Lee Child. I'll put them together. I absolutely love those two authors. And how exciting when they actually wrote a short story or a novella where they took Will Trent from Karen Slaughter's book and Jack Reacher from Lee Child's book, and they put them together in a story. That was one of the most exciting things I've ever read. They publish. They're a book a year authors, so I get really excited. Karen always in June and Lee in September.
See, that's very interesting that you should say that, because Stephen King put Jack Reacher in a novel, I think it was called Under the Dome. And as soon as Jack Reacher turned up, it blew the magic for me. I was completely immersed in Stephen King's world, and then all of a sudden this intruder turned up, and it felt very strange. But obviously, each reader will take it in a different way.
Yeah, now I won't say it was the best one I ever read, but I was so excited to just see that mashup. You know, it's interesting when writers get creative like that and they start collaborating. I don't know if it always works, but I think it's exciting for the reader. But that one particularly worked for me.
So your dad, Cecilia Bertie Ahern, was First Minister of Ireland when you were growing up. If you hadn't become a writer, do you think you would have got into politics?
No.
It is interesting. It works like that, isn't it? If a parent has been in very high profile politics, that the kids have no interest in getting involved in it at all.
Mostly, I find the children do when it becomes like a family thing. So, it's just not my forte. It's just such a different world for me. I think writing fiction is what I is my calling. Politics, no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But it's been a joy to watch him do it. I watch from afar.
We like to surprise our guests with a question from a fellow author and fan. So here we have a voice note courtesy of one of our old friends, best-selling author, John Boyne. Here we go.
Oh. Hi, Simon. Hi, Matt. And hi, Cecilia. It's your old pal, John Boyne, here with a question from a very rainy Dublin. I remember years ago reading that you preferred to write very late at night and into the small hours of the morning, like some beautiful creative owl or maybe a literary Dracula. Do you still do that, or do you now write during the day?
Oh, lovely John. That was a nice surprise. No, I don't do that anymore. And I wrote P.S. I Love You, my very first novel, 19 years ago, from 10 o'clock at night till 6 in the morning. And then I'd sleep till 2. And then I'd get up and type up what I had handwritten the night before. So that was a very intense experience. But when I started having kids, that had to change. So I'm now, I became a 9-to-5er.
But there must have been a reason. What was attracting you to working at night, Cecilia? I mean, it was clearly working for you then. What about working at night really worked for you?
It's so peaceful, I think. And it's quite selfish as well. You feel like the world is yours. There's no distractions. Nobody's ringing your doorbell. Nobody's emailing you or texting you. It is absolutely your own time. And it is kind of, I think it was a selfish way of living, because by day you're not really accessible either. You know, nobody can reach you because you're sleeping off you're sleeping. But yeah, it was very, it's that feeling of, I also think Sundays have the same feeling, you know, that kind of slower, calmer, less stressful time. And it was, I felt like I had all the time in the world actually to just be alone and create without anyone distracting me.
Next question. When I was at uni, I would try to impress girls by having this very well-thumbed French paperback in my bag to show how unbelievably sophisticated I was. Have you ever, Cecilia, tried to impress someone with a book and obviously not one of your own? Although you can say that, but we'll all judge you if you say that. But have you ever tried to impress someone with a book?
So because I published my book so young, I was 21 when I wrote it, and it came out when I was like, I don't know, 22. And people used to be I remember being cornered quite a lot in bathroom toilets, like during literary events, by people going, "What's your favorite classic?" You know, they just thought this young commercial author, how well read was I? And I just used to get so nervous when all of these people would talk to me. And I said it to my uncle, and he said, "You should get a book called How to Talk." Well, he bought me the book, How to Talk About Books You Haven't Read.
Oh, yeah.
By Pierre Bayard. I don't know how to pronounce that properly. Which is literally, you know, learning how to talk about books you haven't read. And so to answer your question properly is, I've just done it now. I haven't read that book. He gave it to me years ago and I haven't read it. But I talk about it like I have read it.
It's a book that deserves not to be read.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah.
Actually, just think back on that John Boyne question. The idea of getting a question about process and when you write from John Boyne, who appears to me to be a machine.
Yeah.
I think John writes 24 hours a day, 7 days. He just doesn't stop. The man is extraordinary. So he doesn't need any more tips. But I'm always intrigued by his process because he's so prolific.
He's a great man to an event with as well, because, you know, we went down to an event in Waterford and he brought little bottles of champagne. It was brilliant.
Ah.
So we drank champagne all the way down to our event.
Wow.
It a very fun night.
So you've told us about your first sort of big hit. Was that actually the first story that you ever wrote, or was there something in a drawer somewhere which never saw the light of day?
There were many things in many drawers, but the first novel I wrote was when I was 14, which was called Beans on Toast and a Bottle of Beer. I remember designing my own cover and everything, and did a Mavis Beacon typing course. Taught myself how to type as well. So that was my first, and that was about I was 14, so I was writing about a 16-year-old who kind of fancied a boy and whose parents were annoying her. So I think it was probably quite autobiographical.
Was it good?
No, but I still have it. I have it, and I never finished it, because what happened was, my mom, who is incredibly supportive, told my English teacher, the brilliant Mr. Ryan, that I was writing this story, and at a parent-teacher meeting, and every day he used to say to me, "Have you finished it yet? When can I read it?" And I was so embarrassed about it that I just never finished it.
I think I would have input on the title, Beans on Toast. I don't think that works. I think you need something better than Beans on Toast as a title.
Well, that was to represent the monotony of daily life, and then the occasional joy. Not that I was drinking beer at 14, but anyway.
Obviously not. So you broke your own rule of never returning to a character when you published Postscript, which was a sequel to P.S. I Love You, in 2020. Having now done that, is there any chance of writing another sequel, do you think?
I have no plans to. I think, you know, I fought that idea for so long with P.S. I Love You. I said, you know, the story's finished, I've nowhere else to take it. But then an idea just came to me, and wouldn't go away, and I actually just felt compelled to write it. So if that happens again with another story, I will absolutely write it, but I don't plan on it. You know, I think it's one of those very spontaneous things.
Gerard, you talk about P.S. I Love You, and Gerard Butler and Hilary Swank were in the movie of P.S. I Love You, and I think you've remained good friends since that film. So the question is, do you think, is there another actor, Cecilia, you'd like to work with on a future adaptation? And do you ever think about that? You know, so we're talking about Alice in A Thousand Different Ways, a book you've forgotten because you wrote it such a long time ago. But do you get casting ideas?
No. Well, I write them for novels. I really do. And I don't think about them being adapted. And I also know that the many books that I've written, the ones that I think would be most obvious books to be adapted into TV or film, aren't the ones that make it. You know, my second book, Where Rainbows End, was turned into a movie called Love, Rosie, and that was written entirely in the form of emails and letters. So I didn't think that would ever be a movie, and it became it. I just worked with Nicole Kidman on my Roar. It's an anthology of short stories, and that's on Apple TV Plus. And there's 8 incredible actors: Mira Sayal, Alison Brie, Cynthia Erivo, Betty Gilpin, Issa Rae. Yeah, there was like amazing cast in that. And right now, I would love to work with Aisling Bea, because I think she is just the funniest, best woman out there. And she actually did the audiobook for Roar, but I've never met her, but I would love to work with her.
Cecilia, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us. In a Thousand Different Ways is published by HarperCollins. It's out now. You can hear Cecilia discuss the novel in detail on our other podcast, our companion podcast, if you haven't got to that already. We'll be back next week for another Books of the Year with bestselling author Joanne Harris. We hope you can join us then. Thank you very much indeed for listening.